Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that come out this week. Kicking it off with Robins, number one from DC Comics, written by Tim Seeley, art by Baltimore Rivas. This is actually the winner of a contest, and in this case, it actually turned out in favor of a Robin rather than killing him. And so we get to see all of the different characters who have held the title of Robin all teaming up together against a new threat. There's a big twist at the end. I'll tell you what, I came into this with pretty even expectations, generally liking Tim Seeley's stuff, but I came away kind of blown away by this book, and I love the idea and love the concept. How did you guys feel?
Blown away is a great way to describe it. I mean, it starts off with a grenade in the nest, and that's a hell of a way to start. I thought they hate birds. I love the art. I love the team. It was so much fun. I even love the backup, the fucked up creepy Robin. This is just a hell of a number one. This is a hell of a first issue. Great way to start. I think, you can tell that this Tim Seeley guy knows what he's doing. It seems like he is a good writer.
I mean, Tim Seeley has been writing comics forever. Like, we've been following him from his very early days. Pete has been literally following him around, touching his shoulders.
You're actually recording this in a car outside of his house
Be cool, okay, be cool. Right, be yeah. Cool.
Touchy-feely Tim Seeley, as he's known on our podcast.
I don't know why we would do that to him. That doesn't seem like a nice thing to say.
It was more because about you being touchy-feely with him.
Whenever you interviewed him, you were always told touching his shoulder and stuff. It was, what?
You love his shoulders.
It's true.
I don't know if that's...
That's why we started that name. Yeah. That's where that came from. Yes, it is. We have the videotape. Yeah. Check the tape.
Roll the tape!
Yeah, roll tape.
This book does a great job of establishing all the different personalities of the Robins and moving forward into the story so well, seamlessly throughout through the issue. The action is blended in. Like, I thought this was a great first issue, and I like all these Robins.
Yeah,
and to have them sharing the book sort of even handedly is a very, I feel like most Robin stories, one or two take precedent because of whatever's going on in the Batverse, and this is really exciting.
Very fun stuff. Next up, Doctor Who, Empire of the Wolf, number one from Titan Comics, written by Jody Hauser, art by Roberta in Granada. I know I'm the Doctor Who guy.
Yeah, which one of us put this in the stack?
Yeah, I put this in the stack. Well, I think we checked out another number one from Titan Comics that was a Doctor Who book, and I think we were all interested in it, even if I had a little more knowledge of it, so I figured it was worth checking out another number one here. This is a pretty complicated one, though, because this is tying into some continuity from the David Tennant years, also bringing in the 8th Doctor, who frankly, even I don't know a lot about, and the 11th Doctor. I like this, given that I care about all of these characters, particularly Rose Tyler, but how did you guys think? What'd you think?
This book was like going to a work party and meeting everyone's spouses.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I was like, oh, what's your, okay, oh, I'll see you in 10 minutes, and I might not remember any of this.
Pete?
Yeah, it was like overhearing somebody talk about something very passionate about that you're just like, wow, this seems really intense, and I don't know if I want to get into it. You know what I mean?
Well, if you are a fan of Doctor Who, then it sounds like this might be interesting, particularly if you like any of the complicated Rose Tyler continuity. But why don't we move on to something we all know, Wonder Woman Evolution number one from DC Comics, written by Sony Phillips, art by Mike Hawthorne. This is a new Wonder Woman book, as you can tell from the number one here, which is pretty cool. We get to see Wonder Woman battle the Silver Swan, I think is the name of the villain character. And then some crazy stuff happens at the end. In particular, I really like the scene in here with Wonder Woman and Superman talking. I thought that was very nice. But this is just getting started. I'm very intrigued to see where this title goes.
This feels like a in a world where we're getting a lot of new takes on Wonder Woman. This feels like a new take that the character is treated differently, and the art really matches it well here. I feel like this is one of the few iterations of Wonder Woman where she really feels like a statue that has come to life, which is the origin from the sort of mid '80s, the clay child.
Yeah, clay child. Yeah,
she feels
the
very
clay
like
clay man, if you will.
Clayman, yeah. What? Great. And so I think the art is really supporting this story. It feels like a take where Wonder Woman is a little bit on the outside of humanity, and we're going to see where she lands. So it was a cool book.
Yeah, I really love the art. Fantastic first issue, kind of this take. Also, like Alex, I love the kind of Superman back and forth. I think this is a different enough take that it just kind of gives you gets you excited for more Wonder Woman. I'm excited to see where this goes.
Next up, Getting Dizzy, number one from Boombox, written by Shea Fontana, art by Celia Muscote. This is a new all-ages book about a girl who really wants to be special, and surprise, she turns out to be special. In fact, she gets some cool roller skates and some cool other items of her outfit.
Gloves?
And the gloves, a helmet, and the ability to detect creatures that are making people very annoyed or angry or frustrated or feel negative emotions, and she battles against them. I think this is another good, solid Boombox book for the whole family. Pete, you usually like stuff like this. What did you think?
Yeah, I do think this is a fun all-ages title. My favorite panel is the What in the Hot Cheese Chips? Just fun. I think it's just this classic take on, like, what if the, you know, the Noid from Domino's was real and you could see it and, you know, would you kind of fight it and that kind of thing. So,
and let's say, just a full disclosure, that's been a dream of Pete's for quite some time, right? Yeah. Like, you've been actually conducting some pretty controversial experiments on animals to try to create a Noid, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Good luck on your experiments, Pete. We could all use a little bit of Noid out there stealing pizza. Is that what he did?
Yeah.
Or money? Unclear. Yeah. You got to avoid him. That's as much as I know.
That's robbing banks and shooting people. I think that's what the Noid did.
He would only rob charities, right? He was a real monster.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Children's charities.
I should just point out that, what we're saying about the Noid is not anything that this comic is based on.
It seems like maybe it is based on a review. And anyway, we got to move on to Superman, Son of Kal-El, number five from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by John Timms. This is a big one. This is the one that broke the internet as Superman finally kisses a boy in this issue. To be honest, that's one of the smallest parts of the issue.
Yes,
I understand why it got completely blown up to huge proportion, but it's a sweet moment in the middle of a book that really actually dives into John Kent's character as he's been overpowered and he's trying to save everybody in the world simultaneously and ultimately finds out that he can't. This continues to be a really good title, and if you picked it up for the press reasons, I hope you stick with it, because there's a lot else to like.
Yeah, I really love the heart of it. The Costa Rican girl moment was very beautiful and touching. I think this is just great, cool story. I like this kind of like take on Superman. It's good to see, and I like where it's going. It's a great representation.
I feel like this book is getting so much press and talk, positive and negative, where it's just like Superman kisses a boy. But really, the take on Superman is so much larger than that. It's, and this book is just a great example of like, it's about like working hard to and sacrificing yourself for your work, not being pulled in a million directions at once. Like, this is not just a culture moment about like representation. This goes beyond all of that into a larger thing. So this book, I think the press coverage is good for this, like, because I think this is John Kent. This, the way it's drawn when he kisses the guy and the smile he has on his face in the last page, I was like, that is so true. That's such a, like, it's just a great relationship moment, really well told in this book. But there's so much more to it that I think is worth reading here as well.
King Spawn, number 4 from Image Comics, written by Sean Lewis, art by Javier Fernandez. I continue to be surprised and blown away, even 4 issues into this book, that I am enjoying a Spawn book so much. But this is Sean Lewis doing what he does, which is really boil down the character, blow it out with some big conspiracies here that are running through the Spawn titles. There's a very gross fight that Javier Fernandez draws very well, and some hints that we're getting into some bigger mythology. But what I like about this in particular is it's really picking things from the very expensive, very long Spawn mythology and using them to actually tell a story about Spawn. That's it.
I agree.
It's expanding the sort of the scope of Spawn in a way that feels actually exciting. I think a lot of times the Spawn scope is like, it's expanded in a way where it's like, no, it's worse than you thought. and this feels like it's elevating it in a way.
Yeah, I think they're doing some great things with Spawn. I also really like this kind of like battling with the mantle that he's doing before things kind of happen. I like a smart Spawn book where they're kind of, it's not just Spawn being pushed around or being a pawn or, you know, emotionally reacting.
A Spawn pawn? Are you worried about him being a Spawn pawn?
I am. Sometimes he's a Spawn pawn. Pawn. But
I would hate to see a Spawn pawn do SpawnCon, to be honest with you.
Oh, man. Spawn.
What are you doing?
SpawnCon.
What are you doing? I just think they're doing a great job. You should check it out if you haven't read Spawn in a while.
Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath his facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader in Batman, The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure, told across 10 episodes, is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max. Batman number 117 from DC Comics, written by James Towne IV, Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, art by Jorge Jimenez and Jorge Corona. This is, I believe, the last issue of James Towne IV's run on Batman, as well as the end of Fear State. I knew.
Come on.
So what do we think about this?
We're just getting started.
What did you think about the end of Fear State as an event, as well as James Titan's run? Justin?
Well, we can all still live in fear, Pete. Don't worry.
Oh, good.
I like this event. I think the art is fantastic on this book. Great layouts, great, just like, especially this issue, real great character focus. Like, we zoom in on a lot of the major players here. Miracle Molly, Batman, Poison Ivy. Harley. Great moment with Poison Ivy and Harley here. And I like this crossover. I feel like some of the criticism that we even talked about here is it was a little too expansive, and some of the actual narrative got a little lost. And I will say it felt like Scarecrow being the horrifying driving force here. By this last issue, is like fully like he's just laying there. That's all at the end. So like as the big bad, and maybe that was the point, that Scarecrow's whole thing is that he's actually easy to defeat once you see through his shit. So if we can get on board with that philosophy, the rest of it I thought was really good. Batman's fight was great. Great to see the Robins working together. And Miracle Molly is a really interesting character. I'm happy to see her. I hope that she's brought back.
I was surprised by this. I loved how touching this last issue was. I mean, the Harley Quinn Ivy stuff was just very moving and great. The, you know, the Molly stuff at the end, also very moving. I thought it was such an interesting end to such a kind of fear thing, you know. So I was impressed. I agree with everything that Justin said. Like, it kind of got a little spun out, and I thought, like, we lost it a little bit, but really nailed the ending. And I'm sad to see that this is ending, because it's been a fun ride and the art was really bananas for this. So
it is sad to see James off the book, but he's doing a million other things, so we'll definitely get that taste. But one just last thing I want to say is so many books at the end of a big crossover like this zoom way out, and we see all the characters sort of like, you know, shaking hands and whatnot. And I just loved this last issue zoomed in on the characters. We got to see them close up and really feel what they were feeling at the end.
Yeah, there wasn't any handshakes. It was hugs, man.
It was hugs. I did want to give a specific shout out. I know you mentioned this, but just in a global sense, the Harley-Ivy kiss that happens halfway through here, beyond being just a great character moment in the middle of the book, really struck me in the same week as the John Kent kiss, which was such a focus of news reports.
Yeah.
Usually you'd have the sort of thing where the publisher would be like, we got a gay kiss in here, folks. That's it for us for the next 5 years. Have a good time.
Yeah.
And the fact that no press, completely under the radar, two issues later, the way that I read it, again, a kiss between two women happened here, and then it's just part of the world and it's part of the characters. It really does feel like DC is putting their money where their mouth is in terms of LGBTQ plus representation, and that's very nice and very awesome to see.
Well, it's something that's felt like we all knew this was going to happen. And to that, I think, then it is treated less like a press event and more like, no, this is their relationship. We've all known this for a while, and now we're just seeing it finally happen.
Yeah, great stuff. Eat the Rich, #4 from Boom Studios, written by Sarah Galley, art by Pius Bach. This is steadily becoming one of my favorite books in the stack here. It's about a woman who travels to visit her boyfriend's parents, finds out they eat the help, but the help is okay with it because they sign contracts that pay them a lot of money.
Yeah,
she's been wrestling with that a little bit.
We've all signed contracts and not been cool with it.
And this issue, a lot of shit goes down as she decides to fight back against this. Pete, I believe you like this one. What did you think?
Well, I don't know if "likes" the right word. It's a pretty fucked up.
You're hungry for it. You want to sink your teeth into it.
You like eating human flesh. Go ahead.
No, I do not. I think it's a powerful take on what it's like to meet other people's families.
It's a meaty take. It's a full plate. It's sort of a double.
You find it a cut above the rest?
There it is.
Yeah. Pete's not going to say
anything.
Well,
Pete's mad about it now. Why is Pete mad about it?
Go ahead.
Well, let me throw it.
What's all your beef about, Pete?
That's good. Let me say real quick, I'll give you a second to think while I talk about the book, because I really like this book. Just what would you taste like if someone were to eat you? Come up with some flavors. We'll be right back. So I think this book is great. And beyond the premise, sort of a big audacious premise, I guess you could say, there's still a lot more happening. We get to learn. We learn just like they eat people. And then it's like, oh, the people who are being eaten have signed away that right. And they're sort of, they made that choice. They walked into it. There's a compulsion aspect to once you start eating people, you need to continue to do it. There's a social class element to the book. It's just got so many layers. On top of that, the art's fantastic. There are a lot of sort of larger swings. Our main character, a lot of her thoughts, her big thoughts, appear as type on the, in the panels, which I think is really cool. I love this book. So real quick, shout out your flavors, your personal flavors.
Candy canes. Go ahead. Pete?
Candy canes. It feels like a dream.
I don't have a flavor.
What are you, chicken?
Come on. You are what you eat, so you are Philly.
I'm not
going to
be a part of
Philly Pete Steak.
All right, well, let's move on to something else. Nubia and the Amazons, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Stephanie Williams and Vina Ayala, art by Aletha Martinez. In this issue, we're continuing the mystery of what's going on in Themyscira as the Well of Souls, I believe it's called, has resurrected a bunch of Amazons. And also, it seems like Medusa or some sort of Medusa creature is wandering around. I like this issue of the mythology. They're building a lot here. It also seems a nice counterpoint to the other two Wonder Woman titles. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. I like the kind of we get to see around the island and what's going on. And also the way they're kind of building up this Medusa type as the big bad and building the tension has been great.
The Medusa sort of subplot or villain plot here is – I really like that. I'm curious to see where that goes. There's a lot of internal hemming and hawing about politics that we don't quite understand, and I feel like that is probably going to turn as well, and I hope they just sort of turn together at the same time. We get a good politics versus turning people to stone intrigue going forward.
Mm. Maw, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Jude Ellison S. Doyle, art by A.L. Kaplan. This continues to be a wild book that is about a lot of things at the same time, but mostly about some monster women who are eating men or killing them. Not 100% sure, but I really like the art a lot.
Well, it's just it seems like it's just one monster woman or woman who's eating people with her maw. But a lot of this issue was about her sister talking to this guy and sort of reckoning with her issues. And then something happens later in the book. I was like, oh, woof. That really caught me off guard. So it is a book that is going through a lot of twists and turns, but I do like it. It has such a specific setting that I think is really working.
I really love the paneling, the pacing, the storytelling of it is really quite interesting and beautiful. It's a fucked up story, but amazing kind of characters and like creepy paneling and all the right ways. So if you like that horror shit, get it.
Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Bilquis Evely. In this issue, Supergirl and her young ward are trapped on an alien planet where Supergirl has completely lost her powers. As we find out, this is a planet that Superman was trapped on for 45 minutes before he was rescued and almost died. Supergirl has to be there for 10 hours, and we follow them as that happens. One of the best issues in already phenomenal series. This was great.
I feel like this book's under the radar a little bit. Like Tom King's books get so much press, and this one is just sort of like a slow boil on the back of the stove. When I think this one is so good, it has this sort of like storybook element to it. We get the second person narration talking about Supergirl this whole time, and it's just this issue is so tense and beautifully drawn. And it's just a great story. There's a big bad that we're really circling who keeps winning. It's really good.
The fucking art alone. You fucking pick it up. You tell me this art isn't worth it. All right? This is just bananas art. It is amazing to look at. It brings you into this world so perfectly. It makes the characters feel different, even though we've seen them in other things. It just... It's a whole mood, and you need to be in it.
Let me throw this out there. I think Pete's flavor is bananas. He uses the word a lot, and it feels like taking a bite of Pete is like a fun banana.
Jesus Primordial number 3 from Image Comics by Jeff Lemire, art by Andrea Sorrentino. This is a book showing what happened to all the animals that went into space. It's weird. It's wild. Lots of stuff going on. I'll tell you what. I'm still not 100% sure what's happening in this book or what the conspiracy elements are, but goddamn, it's gorgeous.
It's one of those. This is one of those books that I think it's beautiful. I do like the story elements, but I'm like, is this the whole issue? Surely there's a couple more pages in there.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit more information. And I think it's hard in comics to find that line of like too much information, too little information, just right. But this one is just, the book itself is just a little light on the story each issue. That's a small complaint because I do think the world that's being built here is really cool. And the animal side of it especially is really intriguing.
Yeah, this is like super tripped out in a way that's like beautiful and very trippy and fun to look at. But I was like, I wish I knew what was happening because I feel like I could enjoy this more. And then the kind of Will Smith moments kind of throw me for a little bit. But then it's goes back to Tripped Out Land, and I'm just like, man, I want to be in on this. I want to enjoy it, and I keep hoping like each issue something's going to click and I'm going to be able to follow it more or at least go back and be like, oh, shit, this is crazy. But that hasn't happened yet, but it's still so amazing. It's worth checking out. I also really like the kind of like sneak preview we get for a comic in the back that looks also really beautiful and cool.
Next up, The Nice House on the Lake, number 6 from DC Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Alvaro Martinez Bueno. In this issue, we're following up on the cliffhanger from the last one, where it turns out that our survivors, of a global apocalypse may actually have a chance to save the Earth. And this issue, we find out how it went all down, what exactly may be going on, and why they might be a test case, and the world actually might still be there, and how they might have time to save it. Another great, horrifying issue of this book.
I feel like, I know the characters are like, we could still save the world. Like, I don't think so. Yeah, I think they're all gone. So I think that is a weird, like, red herring that is being entered into this story. But I really do like, I'm surprised that the story is focusing back on the mysterious Walter character that brought them all together. Because I thought it was really just a catalyst and it was going to be sort of a boiler room type story about all these people dealing with each other. But they really are starting to unravel the mystery, except for their minds being erased at the end of every situation.
Yeah, I kind of this is too creepy, and I want my mind to be erased because that fucking face guy is a big nope. In my world,
you're scared of the face guy. The way he's drawn.
Yeah,
you don't like
exactly.
That face.
I just want
he's
to
not
forget
bad.
It.
He's just drawn that way, Pete.
It's horribly creepy and
stretchy.
I wish I could forget it because it's too much. And no, thank you. But if you're into this shit, man, it's got it.
I have it on good authority. You're gonna dream about him tonight. And I'm so
sorry. Don't fuck
no,
with me.
No, it's
like
going to happen. I didn't mean – I'm not making it happen,
no,
but
that.
It is going to happen.
I'm drinking more, so it doesn't happen. So fuck you.
Doesn't matter.
Clear number 2 from Comixology, written by Scott Snyder, art by Francis Manapul. This takes place in a world where I believe if enough people believe things, they become true, and that's kind of messed up the world a little bit. At least that's what I was getting, since frankly I did not read the first issue of this. But as usual, some very deep, crazy sci-fi writing from Scott Snyder, some good art from Francis Manapul. How'd this strike you guys?
Yeah,
this you go, Pete.
Okay, I was just going to say, yeah, the art is just is creepy in all the right ways. It's a really beautiful, well put together book. The paneling, there's this one panels where it's like each panel, but it's a bigger picture where he's walking down the staircase. It's so beautiful and so eerie. I really loved it. I just think that this is really creative and unbelievable. I'm not sure what's happening yet, but I love it.
Justin,
the premise to me is less that the people believe enough and the world changes, and that the world, everyone's like going into sort of the virtual reality state, and the issue is if enough people have matched their sort of veils, which I think is what the technology is, then they start to all believe the same thing, and people can be influenced. So it feels like the sort of the underlying idea here is about media influence rather than a Department of Truth belief-based system. But there's a lot of ideas in here. It's another Scott Snyder book where it's like he finds his sort of like base characters and really pushes them through this very dystopian world.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a future that could be really fun to live in. You know, you walk up to a blood puddle, you put your hands in it, and then you press it against your helmet, and that becomes your eyes as you drive away into your new reality. I mean, what's that?
That's great. Love? That hardly ever happens to me when I walk up to a blood puddle these days.
Yeah.
Nightwing number 86.
I love jumping in bloody puddles.
Bloody puddles. Peppa Pig. Nightwing number 86 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Robbie Rodriguez. This is tying up the Fear State arc there, and also kicking off a new antagonist for the Batgirls. But the big showpiece here is Nightwing and Batgirl are having a good time talking about smooching each other.
Come on!
Relationship. It's cute.
It's this a good book, kiss. Oh, it's a good kiss.
Having read Batman ahead of this one, I was like, oh, I know how this story ends, so I don't need that stuff here. But what I do need is more of that Nightwing Batgirl love fest, which we have coming up.
The characterizations are just very good in this issue, really nice. Which makes it fun to read.
She said it was a good kiss. So sweet.
Last but not least, Refrigerator Full of Heads, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Rio Uris, art by Tom Fowler. This is picking up from the first series, Bucket Full of Heads? Yes.
Basket.
God damn it.
Why do you keep bucket?
I don't know. I like buckets, man. Anyway, there's an axe that could chop people's heads off and they stay alive. In this issue, we have a shark's head that's been chopped off. We have a bunch of criminals get their heads chopped off. Lots of chopping off of heads. A lot more chopping off of heads, frankly, than Head Lopper. But I continue to enjoy this very much.
Come on, man. You don't have to take a shot at an amazing comic when you're talking about this comic, all right?
Tell you what, though, the refrigerator is not full of heads, so that's a little bit of a knock. Like, there's two heads in the refrigerator at this point, so I don't know. Maybe it's issue two, though.
You know what? Okay.
It's crazy how many refrigerators full of heads there are in Head Lopper. These books should change titles.
They should do a switch.
Well, this is a head lopping good time of a book here. And I, as someone who doesn't like scary stories, the head lopping really makes this fun.
I think this book is also good. It brings in the elements from the initial run from Basketful of Heads a little bit here, which was great. And looking forward to more.
Was it Backpack Full of Heads? What was it?
I don't know. It was something with a B and it was full of heads. That's the only thing that I know. Okay. If you'd like to support...
Colander Full of Heads.
This doesn't start with a B. If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday
Bindle
night,
full
7 p.m.
Bolander Full of Heads.
Crowdcast on YouTube. Box Come hang out. We'd love to talk about baskets or buckets or whatever you want to talk about. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe.
Smoke the heads, man.
Support the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the basket shop. I mean, comic book shop.
Bucket shop. Basket full of buckets. Join Alex, Justin, and Tony.